You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
3 years ago, the brutal hate crime murder of a 9-year-old Tajik girl in St. Petersburg was an international headline story. But since then, the violence in Russia has become so commonplace that it rarely makes the front pages anymore. More than 400 people have been hurt or killed this year alone in a total of 280 attacks. That's equal to one crime every day, a 28% increase since 2006. In the first part of today's Underreported, we will examine this disturbing trend with Paul Legendre, Interim Director of the Fighting Discrimination Program at Human Rights First, and Nikolai Butkovich, Research and Advocacy Director at the Union of Councils for Jews in the former Soviet Union. I'm very pleased to welcome Paul Legendre and Nikolai Butkovich to my show. Hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for inviting us.
Paul, have I overstated the case? How serious is the problem of racist and neo-fascist violence in Russia today?
Well, I don't believe you have overstated the case. Human Rights First issued a report called Minorities Under Siege about a year ago in the run-up to the G8 summit in St. Petersburg, and we pointed then to the serious problem of racist violence in Russia and for the failure of the authorities to take adequate action. Since then, about a year has passed, and we've seen only a deterioration in the situation. You mentioned some of the figures in your opening. Let me repeat some of those. The unofficial statistics show that between 2005 and 2006, there was a 16% increase in the number of hate crimes, and that number has steadily increased in 2007. The SOVA Center, one of the leading NGOs monitoring hate crimes in Russia, has put together this information, and they've documented over 552 cases in 2006. And over the past 4 years, there have been some 200 murders motivated by hatred and racism.
Is it just violence, or has there also been a surge in hate speech and vandalism?
The SOVA Center, on which these figures come, is looking at cases of violence. There are also a number of cases of vandalism, mostly affecting Jewish property, synagogues, cemeteries. And hate speech is on the rise. That's a little bit more difficult to monitor. Our main focus has been on violence, which is a serious problem and needs to be addressed by the Russian authorities.
What groups have been the targets of hate crimes? You mentioned Jews. Is anti-Semitism the main thing here, or are there other groups that are also being targeted?
I mentioned Jews in the cases of vandalism. They appear to be the main victims of cases of vandalism and also of violence. But in cases of violence, we've seen that a wide group of people are potential victims. And in fact, anyone who doesn't fit a Russian Orthodox Christian ideal can be the victim of a hate crime. The statistics show and cases show that people from the Caucasus in Central Asia, people of African descent, Jews, Roma, people from the LGBT community as well, and increasingly anti-fascist and anti-racism activists and human rights defenders are also becoming the victim.
So that means that foreign students would be targeted as well, because they, for a long time, Africans came to the Soviet Union to study. Is this something that was occurring in the old days before the fall of communism?
I don't believe it was occurring to the extent that it's occurring now. If it was, it wasn't documented. What we've seen is a serious situation for African students. You're right to point out that there are many people from Africa studying and working and living in St. Petersburg in particular, and also in Moscow. And there's been a frightening situation for them. In fact, the UN Special Rapporteur on Racism visited St. Petersburg not too long ago and issued a report in which he indicated that people of African descent are living in fear in St. Petersburg.
Nikolai Butkevich, is anti-Semitism has always been the situation in Russia, and it was present during the Soviet Union. Is it just more open today?
Well, yes, I think because of the political climate, it is more open, and inciting the Patriot against various groups is more open than it used to be. The way we put it in my organization's reports is that it's been privatized. And what we mean by that is back in the Soviet days, anti-Semitic propaganda came from the central government in what they called anti-Zionist campaigns, where they would demonize Israel and demonize Jews using various coded language. And they would ratchet it up and ratchet it down depending on their foreign policy goals, and mostly having to do with the Middle East and the United States. Nowadays, it's less controlled, and it's being incited not just by non-governmental actors, but by people, unfortunately, political consultants close to the Kremlin, who are aligning themselves with openly anti-Semitic politicians in an effort to take away votes from the Communist Party, which is the only real opposition party left in the national parliament.
Well, just 2 years ago, 19 members of the Russian parliament signed a letter calling Judaism a satanic religion. So are Jews the group that are most often singled out in political rhetoric?
I wouldn't say most often. They're very often, yes. But as Paul mentioned, it's really people from the Caucasus and Central Asia, predominantly Muslim people, who are the targets, not just of violence, but of hate speech as well.
Is that because of the situation in Chechnya, or would it have been likely under any circumstances?
Well, Chechnya definitely makes it a lot worse. But I think the primary cause has really been the collapse of the ethnic Russian population since the fall of the Soviet Union. The population shrank by over around 1 million people a year throughout the 1990s, and it's still shrinking. It's the largest peacetime demographic collapse ever recorded in world history. And so the people who are dying early and who are not being born predominantly are ethnic Russians, and they're being increasingly replaced by indigenous and foreign Muslim peoples of the former Soviet Union. Millions of them have immigrated to Russia, both legally and illegally. They tend to have larger families. They tend to drink less alcohol or no alcohol at all. You know, they live longer. And so people are seeing their neighborhoods change, their cities change, mosques being built. And when you combine that with the fear generated by the war in Chechnya and the terrorist actions that have stemmed from it, this has really been the major contributor to the wave of xenophobia that we're seeing right now.
What does this mean for the presidential hopes of Garry Kasparov, who was born in Azerbaijan? He's half Jewish and half Armenian. He represents both groups that are under attack.
Yes. Well, I think, unfortunately, nobody, even 100% pure ethnic Russian, has a chance of defeating whoever the Kremlin anoints as the successor to Putin. And now, just in recent days, it appears that Putin is engineering his own succession, because looks like he's going to become the prime minister next year and then change the constitution and the political structure in order to make the prime minister more powerful than the president.
And by the way, the prime minister is next in line for the presidency. So if the president decides to resign, he'll become president again.
Exactly. Just that aside, certainly the ethnicity of Kasparov doesn't help his political chances. But really, that's a question more of the growing authoritarianism in Russia, the fact that there is very little free media left, and the Kremlin's just almost complete control over the political process now.
My guests are Nikolai Butkevich, Research and Advocacy Director at the Union of Councils for Jews in the former Soviet Union, and Paul Legendre, Interim Director of the Fighting Discrimination Program at Human Rights First. They are my guests on today's Underreported. And Paul, what about the 2004 murder of the human rights activist Nikolai Gurenko? Was that part of a large pattern of assassinations?
Yes, it was part of a pattern. It's a case that remains unresolved. It was a case we highlighted in the run-up to the G8 summit in St. Petersburg. It had been stalled for several years. Just to remind you, he was an expert on hate crimes and testified in a number of cases, and he was gunned down in his apartment in 2004. There is apparently a group responsible for that murder and also possibly responsible for the murders of several other people on racist grounds.
And are they simply trying to silence him or intimidate activists in Russia?
It's a case of silencing activists, yes.
And who are the perpetrators of these hate crimes? Is there any government complicity, or are these just neo-Nazi groups that have popped up since the fall of communism?
Mostly the perpetrators appear to be these neo-Nazi skinhead groups that have popped up. Official figures put the numbers at between 10 and 20,000. Unofficial figures say up to 50,000. I think the complicity comes in the fact that the Russian authorities haven't done enough to stop them from committing these crimes. They haven't prosecuted them thoroughly, generally treating these crimes as hooliganism, not passing down harsh sentences, and not trying to root out the groups that are responsible for this violence.
Are they hooliganism? Do they tend to be premeditated, or are they just opportunistic in most cases?
I think in many cases they tend to be premeditated. Groups of people are roaming the cities looking for victims. Sometimes they go outside of the city that they live in to the suburbs to indiscriminately attack. I mean, they're not necessarily searching for specific individuals in all cases, but they are looking for anyone of an ethnic background.
Nikolai, you recently reported for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz on a neo-Nazi group's internet video depicting the execution-style murder of two men of Dagestani and Tajik ethnicity. Was the video authentic, or was it a perverse prank?
Well, most people who have seen it believe that it was authentic, but I should point out that no bodies have been found, and nobody has been arrested for the crime, and the police appear to have no leads at this point. So it could have been a sophisticated prank, but it looked pretty real to me.
Were they imitating Al-Qaeda?
It definitely seemed to be. I mean, it had a lot of the same elements in the sense that, you know, you had the two men kneeling down in front of a large banner, in this case a swastika banner, not as in Al-Qaeda versus from the Quran or something like that. One of the men was decapitated, which is certainly a typical way that at least in some of the insurgents in Iraq execute people, and they were forced to spout propaganda before they were murdered. So I think it did seem to be in that jihadi style of killing.
What was the public response to the video?
Well, at least on the internet forums where it was posted, and I should point out that the video was taken off of those internet forums very quickly, so it's no longer available. But there was a lot of it was a mix really between positive and negative responses. The neo-Nazis have a very large presence on the internet, on the Russian language internet. And if you look on YouTube or some of the Russian sites, you do see a lot of videos posted by these groups of them attacking non-Russians, and you see anti-fascists posting their own videos of them attacking neo-Nazis. So there's a lot of violence on the Russian language internet. But in the press, there certainly was a lot of discussion of it and I would say broad condemnation of it.
Paul, when we cite statistics on hate crime, we're using numbers compiled by NGOs, aren't we?
That's correct.
Why doesn't the Russian government keep track of these sorts of crimes?
They may be keeping track of some of them, but they're not doing it systematically, and they're not making those statistics public. At the moment, the Russian government looks at these crimes through the prism of extremism. Hate crimes are a subset of extremism, and therefore we're not getting a clear picture from them. It's tied to the denial of the problem, I believe.
So the Russian criminal code doesn't have a specific category for hate crimes?
It does have a category, not for hate crimes in the American sense, but it is possible to view a crime as being aggravated by hatred based on ethnicity or racial or religious grounds. A crime that is categorized in that way would fall into the category of extremism and be published with official statistics on extremism. Just to give you a sense, the government reported 263 extremist offenses in 2006 as opposed to 152 in 2005. Now, somewhere in those numbers are the official number of hate crimes, although as you can see, those numbers are very low compared to the real situation and the statistics coming from NGOs.
Nikolai, how are hate crimes reported in the mainstream Russian media?
They used to be ignored until maybe 5 or 6 years ago, for the most part. But the problem has gotten so bad, and it's spread across such a wide geographic area. In other words, you know, 5, 6 years ago, these problems were mostly confined to a few large cities in European Russia. Nowadays, neo-Nazi groups are present in Siberia and the Russian Far East, all over, you know, the 10 time zones that make up Russia.
So this is not just an urban problem these days.
Well, it's not just a big city core European Russian problem.
Mm-hmm.
They are present in some large towns and in smaller cities and in some places even where most Russians haven't even heard of, way out in the boonies. And so this is something that gets discussed a lot, and if you just pick up a newspaper on any average day, you're liable to see a report of a hate crime somewhere in the country.
So journalists who report on hate crimes aren't necessarily making themselves targets of violence?
Well, if they're crusading against it in the sense that they write about it a lot, and if they call for, enforcement of this legislation that Paul was talking about on hate crimes, if they criticize officials saying they're not doing enough, there have been cases where journalists, especially in the regions outside of Moscow and St. Petersburg, have received threats from neo-Nazi groups. And these threats are really blatant. They post the names and addresses and pictures of journalists, anti-fascist activists, and other human rights activists on their websites, and they call for them to be murdered.
Well, it's
pretty blatant.
So since we've been seeing major increases, I guess we should assume that this is going to continue to escalate as a problem.
I think so, especially because we have elections coming up in December for the parliament and in March for the presidency. Whenever there are elections in Russia, there's always a rise in hate speech, I think this helps to fuel the problem.
Paul, do you want to add anything to that?
I agree that I think over the next few months it'll be worth monitoring the rhetoric, which takes place during the course of the parliamentary and then the presidential elections, to see what's being said. I think that will contribute to a further environment of fear for many groups vulnerable to hate attacks.
Thank you both so much for being on today's Underreported. I've been speaking with Paul Legendre, Interim Director of the Fighting Discrimination Program at Human Rights First, and Nikolai Butkevich, Research and Advocacy Director at the Union of Councils for Jews in the former Soviet Union.